team, according to the Sekgopatsi. Thanks so much for all those messages.
Weekend Breakfast with Refilwe Mpakanyane on 702.
So what do we do at this time of the morning on a Saturday on Weekend Breakfast? We talk cars. We talk motoring, of course. And joining me to do just that is our resident car enthusiast. He's the host of Eat, Sleep, Drive, Repeat podcast. Spike Ballantyne, good morning. It's been a minute.
Good morning, Rafael. How are you?
Fantastic, Spike. I won't even bother asking you how you are. You are living a great life, driving amazing cars, so you are set.
I'm all good. In fact, this is one of the rare times where I'm very spoiled for choice. I actually have two cars on test at the moment. So
oh, look at you, just showing off. So, Spike, talk to me about, let's start with some industry news before you give us your car review. Talk to me about Kia recalling more than 440,000 cars. What in the world is going on?
Yeah, so these are all for older cars, for their Sorento and Carnival Sedona models. They've issued a recall if the car is made between 2005 and 2009. Mm-hmm. So they are pretty old models by now. They in the South African context, there's 2,175 cars that they think might be affected by this problem. The problem is that they need to run a check on the ABS circuit. Because the circuit that runs the ABS and the ESC, they say there's a possibility that over time that water or oil might have got into the ABS module. So there's obviously a little junction box or a control box that they're worried about, the kind of spraying of the seals, and they think that some fluid might get in there, and that might affect the ABS and the ESC. So they've asked anybody with Kia Sedona or Kia Carnival or Kia Sorento made between 2005 and 2009 to go past a Kia dealership and have it checked out.
So, I mean, first of all, this sounds like a logistical nightmare, right? 2,175 cars. How quickly does this, essentially, this diagnostic procedure, how fast, rather, is it done? And then what is the fix for that?
Well, I think that the procedure itself, and I'm not a Kia engineer, so I can't be 100% sure, but I think the thing is that it's what they're calling an ABS PCB relay block kit in the junction box. So I think the procedure might take a bit longer because it's not just a plug and play. So they're not going to plug in a diagnostics machine and check if there's a fault. They actually have to inspect the vehicle. And I guess it depends on where exactly in the engine bay or where in the vehicle that relay block kit is. That'll affect how long it takes. And I would imagine it's just a matter of replacing the seal or replacing the box itself, perhaps, replacing the casing that houses that circuitry. That would be the fix.
Okay. So obviously they're contacting their customers and their consumers directly, no? They're not leaving it up to guys like you on the radio.
Yeah, I don't know for sure because these are much older cars. I think if it was within reason, if the cars were sort of 3 to 4 years old, it would be very reasonable to expect them to be able to find a database of owners because, they'll be first or second owners maybe. I think the problem here is that these cars are a lot older. And so, to find exactly who, they would have been sold, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 times by now. So it's very difficult to track down the owners from a Kia database point of view. They may not know who the cars have been sold to simply because they've gone through a number of secondhand dealerships.
Gotcha.
So I think they are relying. I mean, they will of course follow up with their customers if there are any that are still in their books. But, I think they are relying on media and the public awareness.
All right. Well, if you've got a friend who's got a Kia, tell them or tell your friend to tell your friend to tell the other friend so they can stay as safe as possible. We're also taking a look, Spike, this morning at the Mitsubishi Pajero Sport and that updated Jaguar F-Pace. Tell me more about it. Let's start with the Mitsubishi.
Yeah, the Mitsubishi was launched in South Africa this week, or unveiled in South Africa this week. It's the new Mitsubishi Pajero Sport. This is a very important model for Mitsubishi. It is their flagship model. It's a 7-seat SUV. It's been on the market for a while, and personally speaking, I think it's a very underrated car. It's for what you get in terms of value and capability, it really is an acceptable car, and it's a very important one for Mitsubishi. So the update covers a lot of the obvious things when they update cars, sort of front-end styling. is the major one as far as the sport goes. It is pretty big because it's changed quite a lot from the old, and it's now got that really up-to-date Mitsubishi face with it. It's quite a dramatic front end, and it's got quite attractive as well. The rear has also been updated. I think the big changes, though, are on the interior.
Mm-hmm.
So what they've done is they've upgraded the materials and the finishes, and they've also added a new model to the range, top of the range, if you like. It's called the Exceed, and it features a bunch of extras over and above the standard features. So the Exceed will get things like a power sunroof,
mm-hmm.
and a few other options. Well, one of the things it's got that's quite cool is an app-enabled functionality that allows you to find the car and do a few other things via your smartphone, which is
about
pretty cool.
About 60 years overdue. My goodness, the difficulty of losing your car in a shopping mall, parking and traveling levels just to find it.
Yeah. And thankfully, these days, we've got the technology to help us with that particular problem.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, they've also updated a lot of the interior stuff. They've updated the infotainment system, and they've updated the instrumentation as well. It's now all digital, and it does look really good. The infotainment system has got Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. It's got an electronic parking brake with hold function. And for rear passengers, interestingly, there's dual USB sockets for charging, which is not an uncommon thing. But
sure.
They've added something that not a lot of models have as standard. In fact, I'm stand to be corrected, but I think it might be the only one that offers it as standard. But they've got a 220 AC 150-watt power socket. So you can actually charge your laptops. It's a normal, regular power socket, and it sounds like, why would you want that in a car? But I've had test cars with them before, and they actually come in surprisingly useful.
Well, also because we are working everywhere, aren't we? And by virtue of these things called MacBook Airs and laptops being, portable, like they're meant to be, you find yourself on a long drive doing some work, in the car or in the back seat. It makes sense, actually. Why don't most vehicles of this nature have them?
Of that size, particularly when you've got the space that didn't work. On the engine front, nothing has changed. The old Mitsubishi Pajero Sport had a 2.4-litre four-cylinder turbo diesel, and they've stuck with it. So it's a 133 kilowatts, 430 Newton-metre unit, 8-speed auto, and the car is offered with 2 or all-wheel drive. And the higher models get Mitsubishi Super Select four-wheel drive system. And that's just an off-road drive system that helps set the car up for various conditions like sand or mud or rocky terrain.
Okay.
It is a very capable vehicle off-road as well.
All right. So before we get into your Mazda 3 hatch review, talk to me about an updated Jaguar F-Pace. What in the world have they updated? Because this car is still fierce.
Yeah, it's one of the things that always surprised me when manufacturers have such a winning model. And the F-Pace won not only World Car of the Year, but the World Car Design of the Year competition in 2017. So, there's nothing wrong with the look of it, but they still chose to update it. And again, it's the usual suspects. It's a front-end redesign with a new grille, new headlights, and new tail lights at the rear. And some interior changes as well. But, the usual stuff, more luxury, better connectivity, improved refinement, and things like wireless charging, which are fast becoming fairly common at this price point, and also an incredibly useful function to have in a car. It's always a joy to have a wireless charging function in a car. things like the detailing on the gear shift, there's a new gear shifter as well. It's a metal and leather construction. It really is quite beautiful.
Okay.
So they've really upped the luxury all around inside the car. But I think the kind of bigger story here is the introduction of their hybrid drivetrain, the P400E, which is it's a four-cylinder motor linked to an electric motor. And it's a motor that's becoming more and more common in Land Rover and Jaguar products, the P400E designation with that four-cylinder plug-in hybrid setup. So it's available in the Range Rover. It will be available soon in the Land Rover Defender as well.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So they're introducing hybrid drive technology and hybrid, plug-in hybrid technology to South Africa, which is good as well.
And finally, yeah. All right, we've got a question here before we head on into the review. We've got a question from Rob in Johannesburg. Welcome to Weekend Breakfast, Rob. Go ahead and ask your question. Morning.
Yes, good morning, Rafiki.
Good morning.
I'd like to know, why is it in the vast range of cars, you know, the normal, unless you buy a Mercedes or something, you can only get black upholstery, for example. I've got a CRV 2009, got the cream, and it's so much lighter and brighter than all. And you only get black. Twice I've written to Honda, they don't even respond about just having a lighter color upholstery. Black is just so dull and, you know, not. I wonder if you could ask that.
All right. Fantastic. Thanks, Rob. Rob, you obviously don't have an 8-year-old stomping all over your car seat, so I'm sticking with black for now. But yeah, go ahead. Answer that question, Spike.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail right on the head. I think the first thing you need to consider is what is the car's application. And if you're kind of catering to a more family market, the chances of finding lighter upholstery for exactly the reasons you just stated are, you know, they're not going to offer that because it's not going to end well for the customer.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other consideration is that, you know, there's a lot of consideration from the manufacturer side that goes into choosing those materials.
Mm-hmm.
And the ways in which they match those materials and colors. And that all factors into the R&D cost of the vehicle. So as soon as you start introducing new materials, or new colors rather, it does have an effect on the price point of the vehicle, because then they have to spend time and money researching and finding those materials and those colorways. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, they have to end up paying, the customer has to pay for it because they have to cover the R&D cost.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I do agree. I think that more vehicles should be available with more color choices, but ultimately, I think it's a cost factor. And also, you know, they're marketing to a particular type of customer, so they want to make sure that customer's got the best experience possible. And black is the hardest wearing color that you can find.
Absolutely. And then you have to, of course, become that that very particular person who will have no eating or drinking and muddy shoes, et cetera, in the car.
Oh, yeah.
And we all grew up with someone like that in the family. I'm just not her, so like I said.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put my hand up and say I owned a car in the early 2000s with the beige upholstery, with a sort of sandy beige upholstery, and I was definitely that guy. Yeah. There was no eating in my car.
Yeah, no, you have to become absolutely vigilant and fanatical. So definitely for Rob, but not for, I think, too many people. Yeah, the option would be nice, 100%.
Yeah.
All right, so you had a chance to roll around town in the Mazda 3 hatch. Talk to me about this cute little beast that's whose grill is giving me some Jaguar-type vibes.
Yeah, so this is another car that I said it about the Mitsubishi, but I do think this is a very underrated car. And I think if you look at it from Mazda's point of view, what they're trying to do, what they have been trying to do for a number of years, is they're trying to be seen as a more premium brand than they perhaps might have been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So they're directly saying, you know, they want to compete with Mercedes-Benz and Audi and BMW and the like. They want to be seen in that premium bracket. And the cars they've been building, you know, over this period of time, over the last 3 or 4 years, they've been getting closer and closer and closer to the mark every time.
Mm.
And the Mazda 3 is, you know, for me, is quite honestly one of the best-looking cars on the road at the moment.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to describe. It's, you know, looking at pictures. Once you see it in the metal, you know, you kind of get to appreciate just what it's about. And I suppose the one thing that it has got in its favor to kind of underscore how good it is from a styling point of view, it won the World Car Design of the Year award this year. And it beats some quite serious competition to get to that point.
I was going to say, and I guess talk to us about how Mazda has really upped the ante in terms of the offering and the features they've packed into their car, which is quite surprising because, of course, when you have got that sort of long historic view or sense of Mazda, you don't quite expect what they put in there.
Yeah, and this is there's two parts to that. The first is that the design is just really, really well considered. They've gone down the path of minimalism and kind of sleekness. So climbing into the cockpit, there's, you know, very few buttons, and what is there is just very, very nicely presented.
Mm-hmm.
The finishes are great, the layout is superb, And it really does give you a sense of that premiumness they're looking for.
Sure.
In terms of spec, the instrumentation is a combination of analog and digital, and it is really nicely styled. The Stena model, which is the top spec model that we drove, electric seats, got a standard sunroof, it's got a Bose sound system, and the overall is very comfortable. There is one consideration, though, for the interior, and that is getting into the rear, a little bit compromised because of the profile of the car. So it's quite a swooping roof line towards the rear.
Mm-hmm.
And getting into the back, you do have to kind of bend your head out of the way when you get in. And once you're in and the door is closed, because of that pinched look at the rear can feel a little bit more claustrophobic than it possibly is because you're surrounded by a lot of black material
sure.
and not a lot of glass. Mm. So that's the one downside if you're a rear passenger. But if you're up front, it really is a joy.
All right. Okay, cool. So talk to me about the price point of this one. Is it as impressive as the design?
Yeah, it's not far off from the cars it wants to compete with. So it's not a lot cheaper than something like an Audi A1. Mm. And it's also just a few steps away from the entry-level BMW 1 Series.
Mm-hmm.
So the Mazda 3 hatch Astina, which again is the top of the range, goes for 485,000 Rand.
Okay. What are we looking at in terms of fuel economy?
Yeah, fuel economy is always an interesting one because what the manufacturers claim and what you get on the road is always, well, generally speaking, are very different things.
Sure,
I didn't find it excessive in my time with the car. It's got a naturally aspirated 2-litre motor. And the output is 121 kilowatts, 213 meters. So it's not a very, I want to say potent, but that's probably the wrong word. It's a very easy engine. It's not a performance-focused engine. So the fuel economy I found was, I don't have an exact figure, but it wasn't anything other than what I was expecting, for that kind of engine.
Yeah. And of course, you know, we love specific brands in South Africa, and you know, yes, we've got a long memory in terms of associations with those brands. What do you think? Obviously, this is your own perspective. What do you think it'll take for Mazda to finally cement or even reach that premium status that it's looking for?
Well, I mean, you ask what it'll take to reach that premium status. I think they're pretty much, in terms of the product, they're very much almost there. I think that the next generation of Mazdas will have it waxed. I mean, you know, there's the thing about the premiumness of a car is obviously a lot of it is perception.
Absolutely.
But there are things that you can point to in the Mazda 3 and say, well, this is not quite where it should be, and it's little things.
Mm-hmm.
It's things like, you know, some of the switchgear and some of the plastic. You know, if you get out of a Mazda and into a BMW, for example, there is a difference still. It's a very minor difference, but it's there.
Sure.
So I think in terms of what it'll take them to get to that, you know, that sort of, for want of a better phrase, German additive premiumness that South Africans love.
Mm-hmm.
I think they are very, very close. It's probably within the next generation or two of cars that they will have nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, you know, there's a lot of, as I say, perception. So it's about what they do with the marketing, market those cars and who they market them to. Even in that department, they're doing well. I mean, if you go to the Mazda website, the Mazda website is not a car website, you know, that looks like it's been put together. It's all shouty and as fancy as possible. It's a really beautiful, and I don't use that word lightly, it's a beautiful website. They've done it superbly well. And that kind of touch point is vital in this kind of market.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking at it right now, and it looks absolutely luxurious and opulent from the saturated colors that just speak. I guess
the layout,
money
the
and
wealth. Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic stuff. Spike, always a pleasure to chat to you. What are you currently riding around in that we can look forward to hearing all about in the next few weeks?
At the moment, I have the new Toyota Corolla XR, and I have parked next to that a Volkswagen Touareg V6.
Oh, I love the Touareg. love the Touareg. Can't wait to hear your thoughts on that. Aren't you liking
it? Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
So how do you decide which one you're going to drive today? Any mini?
No, well, because they're on time limits, I have to make sure I get enough mileage in each. So at the moment, I'm kind of concentrating on the Toyota because that goes back first. But I will, you know, I mean, if you've got a short enough trip, I'll drive both in a day, you know.
All right, fantastic stuff. Spike Ballantyne, we'll catch up again soon. That's the host of Eat, Sleep, Drive, Repeat podcast. And always fun to catch up with Spike.